Hi, Kate. It's good to see you.
Good to see you.
You've been looking at the NDIS for a number of months. You've been investigating some of the changes. You've got some really personal stories of individuals who use the NDIS have told you what it is that they're worried about.
Yeah, people are absolutely terrified. I think a terror is the word I would use. To summarize, most of the participants, NDIS participants and their families I speak to are so scared at this moment about what's coming for the NDIS. I've had advocates, lawyers, doctors, allied health workers, all sorts of people who work in the space, researchers, academics, who say this moment is the biggest moment of change that the NDIS has faced in its history. And it will determine the changes that come over the next year. It will determine the future of the NDIS, the shape of the NDIS, and whether it is able to stay true to the purpose for which it was created.
So just before we get into some personal stories, can you just give us a sense of what those big changes are to come that people are so worried about?
There are two really big changes that are coming to the NDIS in 2026. One is, and this is the one that people say really could have the biggest impact and is most terrifying for people, is the change to the way that the needs of NDIS participants are examined, and then the way their plans, the money that they get in order to get the assistance that they need to live and flourish and survive, the way those plans are determined. So that's a new thing that's coming in from the middle of this year called the Support Needs Assessment, and it radically changes the way that participants and the NDIS interact to determine the funding that they're going to get. And people are very, very scared about the changes that are coming, and particularly the lack of information they have. I mean, I don't want to blow our own trumpet, but the most information we have about that has come from the Guardian's reporting, which has then been confirmed through questions at Senate estimates off the back of what we have uncovered. And that's terrifying for people. That shouldn't be the way that it is.
Is that because the government hasn't sat down and stepped through everything?
That's right. So the government has provided some information. They've been holding these workshops, information sessions. They say they're really committed to co-design with the communities. But, I mean, a lot of the questions that were being asked, really astute, brilliant questions by NDIS participants in those workshops, which I was part of and heard, the answers they were given by the NDIS were not very fulsome or informative. So there's a lot of fear at the lack of information, and then the information that has come out is really scary for people. The other massive change that's coming has to do with children. And you might have heard the government talking about this new program it's going to introduce called Thriving Kids. And that's aimed at sort of hiving off and removing from the NDIS a very large cohort of participants, which is children 8 years and under who have mild to moderate autism and other developmental concerns. And the idea is that those kids will be taken out of the NDIS and supported through early intervention schemes that are done in partnership with the states.
When on an ATM, we have to make sure that we're responsible going forward. We understand a number of state budgets are under pressure as well, but I've been having constructive discussions with state and territory leaders.
That's not necessarily a terrible thing. There are a lot of issues and questions with it and about it, but that's sort of aimed at rebalancing the governmental support at a federal versus state level for disability.
So just getting more state resources in, so it's not all the federal government. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. It's going to be a profound shift. If it's executed perfectly, it could be fine. If it's not, it could be really devastating, because early intervention for children with developmental conditions, we know from all the research, is the thing. It's the silver bullet. It's the main thing you want to get happening, is in those early years to have amazing early intervention so that kids have fewer issues and dependencies on the state through their adult life. Like, I have talked to so many experts about who will be, who counts as mild to moderate. What does that look like? What developmental concerns are going to be covered by that. Are we talking global developmental delay? Are we talking cerebral palsy? Like, where, what are we talking about here? Is it judged on a functional score of autism that the NDIS has, or a diagnostic score that's actually quite different? Like, how are we measuring this? The lack of information has been really scary for people.
And that's what has made people very worried. You have some personal stories. You spoke to one particular family who set out how frightening this is for them.
Yeah, this was a really sad one. But I think it's an incredibly common one. This family is not alone. This family spoke to me anonymously because they're very scared of putting their head above the parapet, of drawing attention to themselves at such a vulnerable time. So the woman who we're calling Claire is in her 30s. She has a very rare condition. She has mobility issues. She's in a wheelchair. She's never walked before. She is blind, has some communication issues. And she also has a really beautiful, rich life that has been made possible in a significant part by the great support that she has received from the NDIS. So she gets one-to-one carer support to help her. She needs help moving between her chair, with toileting, with dressing, with all sorts of things. And that support has meant she runs a small business. She has competed as a para athlete. She's got this rich social life. She goes out with friends. She goes to concerts. She goes to dinner. She goes to coffee. She has the sort of life you would want for your daughter, sister, friend, yourself, if you, by the roll of the genetic dice, got this rare genetic condition. Her mum said, you know, we often say Claire should be the poster girl for the NDIS. You know, this is what a life, a beautiful, rich life, when well supported by government funding, appropriately managed, can look like. And they're absolutely terrified about the changes that they've seen to the NDIS over the last 18 months.
Now that this is all potentially being knocked down, it is just absolutely terrifying. Like, we just feel sick all the time.
So about 18 months ago, in October 2024, new legislation passed the Parliament, to getting the NDIS back on track bill, and it had a suite of things in it that changed the way the NDIS was operating. A lot of them are quite technical and would take a long time to describe, but it includes things like changing the list of some of the impairments that were supported. It included things like introducing funding periods, so you could only spend money in a certain amount of time, and then rather than sort of manage it over a year, a whole lot of changes to the way the legislation operated. And that brought a lot of fear for people that their plans suddenly would be cut, or they'd be reassessed and deemed ineligible for access for the NDIS. So, for instance, in the case of Claire, they're just so scared.
Like, we're constantly upset about it. Sorry, I'm getting upset just talking about it. But, like, I think just the fear that everything is going to be taken away, and that, like, we to even go through this process again would be horrible. Like, and even if there is no process to even go through, like, what are we going to do?
Her sister's hair fell out with the stress.
The real impact from these changes has been, like, so palpable. When the legislation changes had come in and had gone to the dermatologist, and he was like, you're having like rapid hair loss, has something stressful happened? And it was just this, and it had made all my hair fall out. I had to go on medication just from the stress that everything is going to fall apart.
We also know that the number of cases, NDIS plans that went to tribunal, which is the sort of appeal body of last resort for NDIS participants, absolutely skyrocketed after those changes were introduced. So if we look at the numbers at the tribunal, and this is a key sort of metric that advocates point to show that something has gone awry. If we look at the numbers for 2024-2025 at the tribunal compared to the previous financial year, the number of NDIS cases coming through increased by more than 75%. So that's just a massive increase. And it's not just the number, but also the rate. So the percentage of new cases that were needing an appeal also increased dramatically. And the number of times when an NDIA decision was overturned in the appeal process is dramatically higher than for any other type of case that the tribunal hears. 75%, again, 75% of NDIS cases brought before tribunal result in the NDIS's decision being overturned or varied. So that's just a huge, I mean, to be honest, fail rate of the NDIS.
Does that tell us that there's something wrong with the decision-making process?
Yeah, I think if the tribunal's finding that 75% of the decisions made by the NDIA should be overturned, something's going wrong there.
We'll be right back. Underpinning all of this is a government attempt to cut future spending. They call it the projected growth in spending as simply unsustainable. Is the government just trying to boot people off the scheme? Can we say that? Is that what families fear?
It's certainly what families fear. And we know really explicitly from the Thriving Kids program that that is what it's about. When Mark Butler announced it, it was about the sustainability, long-term sustainability of the NDIS, and that meant cutting growth of new participants. And so, I mean, the numbers have been extremely high and far higher than the government expected. At 1.22% annual growth of participants, that's come down. The government wants to get it to about 5 to 6% per year, and that means some pretty significant changes. So yes, that certainly is what people fear it is about. It's really hard as well though, because the NDIS would say, for instance, with the changes to the way they're going to assess support needs, that, I mean, they do say, they've said it to me many times in many communications we've had, but that it is about also having a more fair, standardized, equitable, accessible approach to planning and providing funding. And I don't doubt that that is a significant part of it and that that is part of the rationale. What's really, really hard though is when you know that the government has a mindset of cutting funding, that it is committed to bringing the growth rate down, of bringing the cost to the NDIS down, and they're not providing really transparently comprehensive information about how a new change to determining funding is going to work. It is very hard for participants and their families and their advocates to trust that the only motivation is the well-being of participants and the fairness of the scheme, and that there isn't a very strong budgetary motivation behind the changes that are coming, and therefore that they can trust that if their needs are high, if that is expensive for the government and the taxpayer, so they can stay alive and stay independent and stay living a beautiful, rich life that, to be honest, I'm so happy for my taxpayers' dollars to go to.
So the government's trying to cut spending. The budget's bigger than what they anticipated. Families are unable to trust, perhaps, that this is going to be done with their best interests at heart. How do advocates and experts say this should go if the government wants to reduce spending but still keep people who are using the scheme comfortable that they're going to get what they need? What needs to change?
Well, many would say that the whole narrative of a sustainable versus an unsustainable NDIS is mistaken, on account of, they would argue that actually every dollar invested in the NDIS pays off in a suite of other ways when it comes to preventing the cost at the hospital level, the aged care level, investment in the economy, all of that. I think a really fundamental part of this is to do with the way that the states and the Commonwealth interact when it comes to funding. And that goes back right to the beginning of the NDIS. The NDIS was never meant to function as the only game in town when it came to disability support. The states had been providing in concert with the federal government quite a lot of disability support, and then that was meant to remain, actually. There were certain tiers, and that tier of support within schools, within early childhood, within community health settings, that was meant to stay there. And in a lot of cases, it didn't. And those state-funded programs exited the playing field, and it left the NDIS as the place to get support. And that had a knock-on effect that, for instance, if you took your child to a public school and that the child had autism and needed some extra support in the classroom, often what would happen is the school would say, you need a diagnosis, you need an NDIS funding package. And I think part of what the government is trying to do, at least with the Thriving Kids program, is to rebalance that and say, no, there are some supports that need to be provided at a community level, and we're going to work with the states to try to make that happen. And so even Thriving Kids is, the government has promised $2 billion over 5 years. They're looking for matching funding from the states. Our brilliant political editor, Tom McElroy, revealed last week that the government may push back the start of Thriving Kids in order to secure that, get a better deal with the states. So if done well, if the states step up, if the sort of support that Thriving Kids offered is still the sort of individualized support that kids really need, that evidence shows really helps them to thrive, as the name of the program suggests is what the goal is, that perhaps could be a way for a more sustainable or lower cost to the federal government scheme. But yes, it's not a straightforward thing that advocates would say sustainability means sustainability. I think they would often say sustainability means cost cutting that doesn't necessarily give a happy and sustainable future for all disabled people.
Kate, The Guardian is going to continue to look at this and report, but for you, it's a bit of a goodbye for the moment.
Yes, I am off on maternity leave, off to have a baby, and I wanted to thank everybody over the last months who has been so generous with their expertise and personal stories, and as I've reported on this topic. So thank you. But please know I'm disappearing for a bit, but The Guardian is not when it comes to NDIS reporting. And my brilliant colleague, Chris Norse, who's our chief investigations correspondent and who is the man who exposed RoboDebt, he's an absolutely brilliant reporter, and he will be taking over this. So if you have story tips or thoughts or wisdoms to share, please email Chris. So Christopher Norse, and we can put his email there. He's very Googleable.
So there'll be continued reporting this year on those radical changes with the NDIS. But for now, Kate, thank you so much.
Pleasure. Thanks, Regin.
That was senior reporter Kate Lyons. This episode was produced by Karishma Luthria, sound design and mixing by Camilla Hannan. And the executive producer of Full Story is Hannah Parks. Just before we go, if any of you are listening on Spotify, there are changes underway on the platform, meaning it might be harder to find us there from now on. So if you want to keep up to date with our latest episodes, hit follow Full Story on Spotify to ensure you don't lose us. I'm Regid Ahmed. See you soon.